Good number. They just got the growth number today. 4.8%.
For the year?
No. First quarter, second quarter, what?
Honorable Van Rooyen, Honorable Sogoni, can you take your seats unless you are horrible? Thank you. Let me first extend my apologies to the Commissioner of our South African Revenue Services and his team. But fortunately, because it's been part of the deliberations, you can see that it's not a deliberate effort on our part to undermine your presentation. And I did say at the beginning that it's an equally important, if not more important, for all of our work. We will take your presentation at the moment. And as I did say, towards the end of this presentation, we will read the resolution of the committee in terms of the IMF matter. We've drafted something for the committee to adopt so that we can be able to move forward quickly. Brendan, you are released. You'll get the...
Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah. Thank you. Minister?
Chair, just one preliminary remark and then three comments on SARS. I've just got news that we were talking about growth in South Africa. That first quarter GDP came out at 4.8%, which is excellent. If it carries on like that, then we'll be way above the 3.4 that we talked about earlier on. And what's extremely encouraging is the strong growth in manufacturing. This is a sector that parts of which is impacted upon by the strong rand, as everybody calls it, but clearly our manufacturing community is also demonstrating its resilience and its capacity to survive some of the global conditions and do extremely well. So apart from agriculture, most of the sectors have shown very positive growth, and that's a good sign, Chairperson, for the rest of the year. So my first point in respect of SARS was to ask the committee to take account of the growth prospects and therefore the revenue prospects. So if they are improving, the commissioner's got harder work to do as we go. And the target for this year is 741 billion, and over the next 3 years, they'll collect well over 2 trillion rands in terms of their contribution to the fiscus. But equally, we need to be mindful of the global risks that we talked about earlier on as well, any of which could begin to have a negative impact upon our growth prospects and therefore revenue prospects. But the key to growing revenue in South Africa and therefore giving government the greater fiscal space that we require is to grow the economy. By that I mean having more people employed, as I said earlier on, and more businesses expanding and more businesses being created so that you can then get more taxes. There's no other way of getting more taxes. The second issue which pertains to SARS is that recessions invariably lead to more what we might call politely unacceptable tax practices. And this is something that you see globally. It's also something that we see in South Africa. And we'll talk a bit more about it in the next few days as well. And what's happening around the world, Chairperson, is that high net worth individuals are finding better ways of avoiding paying their share of taxes. The structured finance arrangements are becoming even more aggressive than the past. But thirdly, recession also means that developed countries are facing fiscal constraints themselves. So they are now putting pressure on developing countries under the heading of domestic resource mobilization. In other words, do more in your own countries to mobilize your own taxes rather than depend upon aid. So South Africa, fortunately, is not dependent upon aid, and we've got an excellent example in SARS of domestic resource mobilization, but be aware that there's this trend. On the African continent, there's an interesting initiative called the Extractive Industry Transparency Index, which is going to ask both companies and countries to transparently indicate where, what amount of tax was paid when and by whom. So, because this then enables us to understand where are the resources in individual countries, whether companies are paying their fair share of taxes, and whether countries are using them appropriately. Another initiative internationally is what is called country-by-country reporting. And that also is something that is going to improve domestic resource mobilization. Another indication of the way in which the issue of taxation and enablement of the fiscus comes into focus is the example of U.S.-based companies who are holding over $1 trillion offshore and who are saying that they will not bring that money back into the United States, notwithstanding all the debt difficulties that it has, unless it pays a lower rate of tax than 35%. They got a deal like this in 2004. But here's an example of corporate citizenship going wrong. $1 trillion is a lot of money, and I'm sure the U.S. could actually use that. Coming to SARS specifically, the focus for this year will be the continuation of improvement in the service that SARS provides to South Africans. Secondly, the expansion of the modernization program to VAT and CIT, and in particular to customs, and I'll come back to that. But also, modernization has reached a point of maturity where the products that are developed within SARS can now be used elsewhere in government. And I'm sure the Commissioner will talk about that, Home Affairs being one example. And in this way, from a Treasury point of view, we can save a lot of money if products developed in one area can be used in another area, and we don't reinvent the wheel and spend the money in reinventing the wheel as well. The last point I want to make is in respect of customs modernization. This will very significantly improve the efficiency and effectiveness with which we manage trade facilitation in South Africa. If we can persuade our neighbors in SACU to also implement these systems, it will avoid a lot of the problems and arguments about trade data in SACU and who has exported what to whom and so on, and remove some of the debates and make some of that data more transparent. But thirdly, the lessons that we're learning in this regard in South Africa can play a very important role in trade facilitation across the African continent. Because one of the biggest challenges that the African continent faces, apart from the logistics challenge of not having infrastructure, is non-tariff barriers, the way in which customs administrations operate, and delay trucks passing, and so on and so on. And we hope that SARS can play a role through its modernization of customs in this regard as well. Let me now, Chair, hand over to the Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Minister. Honourable members, and the Honourable Chair, they say that there are two kinds of people who complain about tax or moan about tax. It's women and men. and I'm sure in this house today there are no people like that who complain about tax. Chair, I'll make some few opening remarks just to contextualize our presentation, then I'll go straight into our four outcomes here, if you allow me. Honorable members, in his State of the Nation address on the 10th of February this year, the President noted that we had achieved much as a nation in 17 years of democracy, but he exhorted all South Africans to work together to achieve even more. The central theme of the President's address was that each and every South African has a role to play in our nation's success, and he concluded with the following say. The President said, our goal is clear. We want to have a country where millions more South Africans have decent employment opportunities, which has a modern infrastructure and a vibrant economy, and where the quality of life is high. We all have a responsibility to work hard to make this a reality. As SARS, we are both proud and humbled by our role in supporting this shared ambition. As our country's revenue authority, we facilitate, as the chair said, perhaps the most widespread and far-reaching engagement between the state and its citizens. For while the president's call for all to contribute to our nation's success goes beyond mere financial support through taxation, it is the revenue, honorable members, which provides the solid and enduring foundation for the acceleration of our progress as a country. At the heart of this social contract, honorable members, lies compliance on the one hand, and on the other hand, accountability from SARS. These are two pillars of the democratic state we have built, in which citizens participate and contribute to the common good, and the state accounts for how it will and has used those contributions to meet the needs of the people. The IRA submission of our stress plan to Parliament is an integral part of our accountability. It is the government's entity to provide a roadmap for how we will contribute to the improvement of the lives of all South Africans in the period ahead. A roadmap which I hope will be able to highlight the key milestones and markers along the way against which we will account the progress on this journey to you. So we are privileged, Chair and Honourable Members, as SARS to present our roadmap for the next 3 years. The SARS strategic plan we present today is a roadmap for the next important part of our ongoing journey to build a culture of tax and customs compliance and a sustainable, trustworthy and efficient and effective institution which all South Africans can be proud of and have faith in, more importantly. In these two overarching and enduring objectives, honorable members, we express in four core outcomes of SARS that will serve as a foundation for all current and future strategies. So the four outcomes which are on the slide there, honorable members, of SARS are to increase customs compliance, to increase tax compliance, to increase the ease and the fairness of doing business with SARS, and to increase the cost effectiveness, internal efficiency, and institutional respectability of its operation. All of these four outcomes are interdependent, honorable members, and mutually beneficial, as the pursuit of achieving one outcome frequently enables the achievement of another outcome. Increasing the ease of fairness, as an example of doing business with SARS, encourages at the same time economic growth, which in turn supports job creation and ultimately leads to greater revenue collection. Similarly, if you maximize the cost of effectiveness of SARS, it builds confidence and accountability that government is utilizing its taxes effectively, and thus a greater willingness to comply with obligation is encouraged through this process. The outcomes contained in our strategic plan were developed with a primary strategic focus on reducing the amount of red tape that taxpayers and traders are faced with, so as to enable people to enter into the economy and also raising the level of compliance. We believe that this will not merely address the issues of technical compliance, honorable members, but more importantly, the long-term objectives of building a behavioral level of compliance in which compliance to the spirit and not just the letter of the law takes root as a positive social value. In most instances, This compliance manifests along the entire value chain, which for most of the legislation that SARS administers, including on-time registration, on-time filing, full and honest disclosure, and on-time payment. Honorable members, our approach for many years in pursuing these outcomes has been founded on the philosophy of compliance, which is based on education, service, and enforcement. Education is a foundation of this model because taxpayers and traders must, as a maximum requirement, know and understand their obligation, and more importantly, how to meet that obligation. Education is the foundation of this model because taxpayers and traders must, as a minimum, I repeat, understand their obligation and how to meet them. But knowledge alone, as you know, is insufficient to ensure compliance. Unfortunately, for example, knowing the speed limit is 60 kilometers an hour and actually driving at 60 kilometers an hour are two quite different things, as you can appreciate, as I'm sure any driver in this room can attest to. Our experience and that of many other enforcement agencies around the world has shown that in order to get people to obey the speed limit or not to drink and drive or to declare and pay all their taxes on time takes two additional factors. The first is appealing to most people's sense of right and wrong. Most people want to do the right thing. And if you can convince them of the benefits of compliance, that not speeding, as an example, or not drinking and driving is safer for them and for other road users, and that paying your taxes has direct benefits to you and all South Africans, then you will have made a significant progress in creating a moral foundation and a growing social consciousness for compliance. The second, honorable member, key motivator is a credible threat of detection and meaningful consequences for non-compliance. Only the most foolhardy people will exceed the speed limit, as we have to carry on with the same example, if they know there is a speed trap ahead and that getting caught will result in a heavy fine or even an arrest. This threat, honorable members, is not only there for those who are not moved by the nobler moral motivation. It also provides a vital sense of justice and fairness to those who are doing the right thing in knowing that those who are not willingly paying, the consequences of their actions will be realized. SARS will continue to apply this model by ensuring that all are aware of their legal obligation, that it is reasonably easy to meet this obligation and to have a credible deterrent on consequences, including social stigma, for those who seek to avoid their obligations. So how do we plan to improve service and enhance this enforcement? Most of you in this committee have heard repeatedly over the last 4 years or so about the importance of our modernization program and how it seeks to, through automation, to release human resources away from routine, low-value-adding activity into service, education, and enforcement areas with high-value-adding activity. This program of modernization, honorable members, continues to be a central enabler for all our objectives. The benefits of this initiative for increased efficiency, for improved service and convenience, for greater risk detection and broader compliance has been proven within the PIT, the personal income tax process, with which you are much more familiar as individual taxpayers. These are also bearing fruit in driving greater compliance and associated revenue with natural results in more South African playing their part in our society. Last year, in the last individual tax filing season, we hit for the first time in many years a record submission of over 4 million taxpayers filing their returns. These and other measures have helped to garner additional revenue in support of government's program of action at a time when revenue around the world is under significant pressure from global economic factors, as the minister said. Despite the continued fragility of the economic recovery, as the DG mentioned in his slide, SARS was able to collect 674.2 billion in the revenue during the last fiscal year, representing year-on-year growth of around 76 billion or 13%. But a great deal of work, honorable members, remains to cascade this gain throughout SARS as an organization and the various major tax customs processes which we administer. Last year, if you remember, honorable members, we indicated that the modernization of customs, as the minister also mentioned in his opening, will be a key focus in the medium-term period ahead. This program continues very strongly and holds great potential for both protecting our country's people and economy from harmful, illicit and unwanted goods and products, and at the same time will be supporting economic growth by freeing the movement of legitimate goods from compliant traders. And our modernization program is expanding to the VAT and corporate income tax this year, as announced by our minister in his budget speech earlier this year. These are just a few of the priority programs we will focus on this year, and I think provides an opportune moment to turn our attention to the full range of priorities which we have outlined in the strategic plan. So what are our seven priorities emanating from the four outcomes that we have identified? Honorable members, in order to ensure continuity and accountability, we have retained the seven broad objectives of our previous strategic plans. And the following are some of the changes that are there. Our three-year deliverables for objectives, one which is drive revenue realization to deliver now and to ensure sustainability. Under that, some of the activities and things we'll be doing include growing the taxpayer register through inclusion of individuals or businesses that are eligible to pay tax, as well as the inclusion of individual or businesses that are likely to become eligible in the future. So, in essence, what we are saying is everybody that transacts in our country, whether because he is a present taxpayer, but because more importantly they have the potential to become taxpayers in future, would be registered for tax. Streamlining the audit and customs inspection processes and strengthening audit capability to deal with complex cases and serious taxpayer and trader non-compliance. We'll also be re-engineering the debt collection process. We'll be expanding the administration of penalties and non-compliance. You know that in 2009, in October, we introduced the new penalty regime, which has had very positive yield so far. So we will be expanding that application of that penalty regime to far more non-compliant taxpayers. If you remember, we started with the serial non-compliers who have lots of multiple outstanding tax returns. This year, we will be implementing immediately once your tax return is outstanding, you will be getting the administrative penalties. And if I could take this opportunity to remind the honorable members that the administration penalty regime that we have is actually very effective, because for every month of that you have an outstanding return, the penalty accumulates with interest. So it's a really nice money-making machine if you don't get compliant. We'll also be expanding the use of third-party data, honorable members. The time seriesing of taxpayer history and statistical scoring methodologies to enhance our compliance risk detection and the rating capabilities of our personal income tax, pay-as-you-earn, CIT, VAT, and customs. And we'll also be concluding the voluntary disclosure program to encourage proactive disclosure of non-payment by non-compliant taxpayers. We are expanding this voluntary disclosure program to include also overseas entities where people have structures and money outside the country. Our second priority is to drive productivity, service quality, and cost efficiency internally. In this regard, we aim to improve the ease and speed of registering and other interactions for businesses supported by a single view of each taxpayer and trader. We also plan to improve turnaround times and reduce paperwork for transactions and queries via automation for priority taxpayers and trader segments, authorized economic operators will start to take shape. We will implement a revised service philosophy. We'll revise the service charter and our channel strategy of how we meet taxpayer and trader needs. So our third priority will be to, our third objective and priority, honorable members, is to fully deliver on SARS customs mandate through the following key deliverables. A seamless transition to an integrated border management model developed with the other government departments. An enhanced service offering, reduced paperwork again, quicker processing time to preferred traders, compromising around 80% of all legal trade entering our country. We'll also improve the ease and speed of declaration process and inspection through the modernization processes and systems. We'll also have a system to prioritize and expedite customs inspection through use of additional data sources and the continued rollout of non-intrusive inspection capabilities to vastly improve our ability to inspect goods crossing our ports of entry. We'll also be enhancing border control detection capabilities through the Customs Border Control Unit, the CBCU, and the Dog Detection Unit, thereby improving security at ports and of entry. We'll also enhance traveler experience when entering or leaving our country. And with these things, we work very closely with the Department of Home Affairs. Fourthly, our priority is to improve SARS operating model, streamline governance, and strengthen our leadership. And this we'll do by fully implementing our remaining parts of our operating model with integrated workforce and makes South Africa workforce more empowered, agile, and responsive to meet the needs of our taxpayers. We need to continuously look at our operating model because of the modernization and the changes that we do, because it affects the role that people are performing on a day-to-day basis. We'll streamline our governance framework to reduce unnecessary levels of bureaucracy while still maintaining appropriate levels of oversight. And further, we'll embed the SARS values, which we call value-based leadership model, with appropriate resourcing and capabilities. Our fifth priority, Chair, is to deliver differentiated products and compliance approaches, including targeted and tailor-made outreach, education and service and enforcement strategies that meet the needs of different taxpayers and trader groups as part of our segmentation approach. And the Minister did mention pockets of non-compliance, like, for example, high net worth individuals, aggressive structured finance, and offshore cooperation. And I must mention also one of the things that we will be doing is really to look at expanding our ability to have joint audits with other jurisdictions, tax jurisdictions, particularly on the continent. And one of the bodies that we will be leveraging is the African Tax Administration Forum, which we chair. We'll do all these things by delivering tailored service to meet the needs of five priority segments that we have identified, which is namely the large business center, the medium-sized business, practitioners, traders, and individual taxpayers. We'll also accelerate the development, which is a priority, one of the priorities of government.
of the development of a small business segment in support of entrepreneurship, economic growth, and job creation, including relooking at how we can be able to enhance the turnover tax system. From an internal perspective, our sixth priority, honorable members, is to enable such people to perform at their peak. We'll continue on this journey by embedding our workforce methodology to inform employees of their development opportunities, redeployment, and recruitment, enhancing our employee value proposition to attract and retain the kind of skills that we need in SaaS. We'll improve our performance management processes to empower managers to effectively manage employee performance. We'll improve our organizational culture and employee engagement levels, and building on an external skills pipeline to enable sustainable employment creation. I'm going backwards now. Finally, honorable members, our seventh strategic priority is to deepen key external relationships to manage the whole value stream. This priority acknowledges that we cannot achieve our objectives as SaaS in isolation, and that both tax and customs are systems with a wide variety of stakeholders who are partners in our journey. Nowhere where the benefits and gains of this cooperative approach is more evident than in the planning and hosting of the FIFA World Cup, which the chair mentioned earlier. Out of this collaboration that happened during the FIFA World Cup, especially between those agencies who cooperated in the security, including border security, has been born on an ongoing and encouraging partnership which is working towards an enhanced border management process. This collaboration, honorable members, has manifested in additional benefits, including a partnership between SARS and the Department of Home Affairs, in which we are assisting the department to modernize its processes, leveraging the investment and the investment that this government of ours has made in SARS to a tune of about 2 billion rand in the last 4 years has been leveraged in our assistance to Home Affairs. We are also privileged to be working together with the DTI and others in developing and implementing a single streamlined and secure business registration system. As part of our priority to develop and expand key relationships with stakeholders over the medium term, Chair, we plan to enhance outreach, education service, and enforcement by building collaborative partnerships with private, public, and international sector partners and utilizing their feedback to improve our compliance. We'll also make a broader societal contribution through targeted high-impact initiatives like a registration of foreigners and businesses that exist in our country. We'll build institutional respectability and service delivery excellence for SARS and its government partners. So, Chair, you will ask us and honorable members, how are we going to measure the seven priorities? SARS is continuing with the alignment and performance management approach to that of the, aligned to that of the government's new planning, performance, and monitoring and evaluation approach, with the emphasis on delivery. This new planning approach emphasizes the need for us as SARS to set and achieve objectives and clear measures for each of our core four outcomes. We aim to hold ourselves accountable in the eyes of the government and its people against associated targets. However, moving towards an outcome-based approach is not an easy task. A recent OECD report, honorable members, is called Tax Administration in OECD and Selected Non-OECD Countries, which was released last year, 2012, in October, showed that even countries that have been using this approach, the outcome-based approach, for over 15 years, they continue to struggle with issues of measurement and target setting. This is especially the case for outcomes. A key challenge for all countries is obtaining good quality information, which is valid, reliable, and very timely.
among the challenges that we are facing in, you know, getting a much more sharper measurements for ourselves is finding accurate measures of performance. Outcome measures are technically more difficult to measure. They are complex and involve the interaction of many factors, blend and unblend. Also, there are problems with time lag issues, and in some cases, the results are not completely within the control of the Revenue Administration. Most countries have adopted a combination of still having output measures and then and starting to introduce slowly outcome measures. While the ideal outcome measures, Chair and honorable members, have been developed and implemented, a set of proxy output measures will be used to monitor and evaluate SARS delivery against its core outcomes. These proxy measures, which you can see on the slides there, and they are also in more details on, in the strat plan, will monitor and evaluate SARS delivery against the core outcomes. These proxy measures have been selected to provide a reasonable level of accuracy of progress against the core outcomes and to hold the organization accountable. The output measures selected as proxies are well established, and they are output measures that we have been using before we switched to outcome measures. And they are still robust, some of them, and reliable matrices that we've been using, as I say, in SARS. The measures and targets by which SARS will continue to hold itself accountable to the public are detailed in our strategic plan and are presented here to you today. Highlights include, for example, as you can see over there in the slides, significant increase in electronic submissions and a marked improvement in turnaround times, particularly after the implementation of the VAT modernization, CIT, and customs. Our budget resources will be allocated in roughly the same split between our modernization, enforcement, service, and support functions, as you can see on the slides. Furthermore, there will also be marginal increases in our human resource levels, as you can see, from 15,896 people last year to around 16,035 by the end of the midterm. In conclusion, honorable members, the three-year roadmap we have presented today is part of a longer journey which began 17 years ago with the birth of our new, inclusive, just, and democratic order in our country. It is part of our journey towards meeting the hopes and aspirations of all our nation's people. It is part of a journey which, as the President noted, we must take together and in partnership if we are to move more rapidly along this path of progress. We believe that the strategic choices we have made will best advance us along this path by creating a very strong moral foundation for ever-widening tax and customs compliance, built on a credible, accountable, efficient, effective, and value-based institution which all South Africans can be very proud of and, more importantly, have faith in. With those few words, I thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Honorable members, I'm sure you have listened attentively, and we had this presentation probably by yesterday. Okay, let's move in. All right, it's your turn to interact with the presentation, honorable members. Honorable Swart, followed by, have you all paid your taxes? It seems to be strange. See, I'm not sure. This enforcement part of your presentation, does care, honorable members, commissioner. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Commissioner for the very extensive presentation. Your target this year is 741 billion. Should the we saw the first quarter GDP figure coming in at 4.8. One presumes your target is based on the 3.4% target, is it a possibility or likelihood that if our growth rate continues on that trend, that at your target, you might come in above the target? One is always optimistic, and I think you came in above your target last year, is that correct, which was quite commendable as well, and that might assist in the government debt levels and the deficit on the budget. And then that's the first issue. The second issue is addressing corruption within SARS. I think particularly the VAT issue. What further steps do you intend instituting to deal with corruption within SARS and those areas that obviously impact on revenue collection? And then again, just to commend from our side the incredibly good work that SARS does, and please pass that on to your staff members, as well as the parliamentary office that deals with us parliamentarians. They do incredibly good work. They're very firm with us, which is to be expected, but they are very fair in their treating of us. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Mazamin, you'll be followed by Honourable Sogoni.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the staff family. You know, I think the Commissioner today was really coming from Oxford University. I'm trying to look at. I've read and I understand your seven objectives, and the tracking system that you have used for the outcomes, that's what is confusing me. I'm trying to align it with the seven objectives individually, and I'm getting confused. If maybe the commissioner can just go a bit down from the level where he was, so that I understand exactly what measure do you use to evaluate the rest of your objectives. And on the last page where you're talking about the expenditure, there's an interest income of about 30,000. So what is that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you're right, Chair. The Commissioner might be scaring members instead of educating members, you know. But the issue of maybe following up on what Honorable Swartz was saying about, I don't know if he did mention, maybe he didn't mention this one, the over collection, I think it was mentioned by the Minister, by 2 billion. Why did we have over collection? Was it? Why? Or were we very, maybe was our projection intended to achieve that over collection, or how realistic were our projections? And now, moving forward, for instance. Maybe the other question could be linked to that. What was the role of the World Cup in the whole, what you call, picture in this increased collection? I think that's a question, Chair, that I would like to ask. Thank you.
Maybe before you respond, Honourable Commissioner, I see your strategic plan, you have moved from 11 strategic priorities to 7. Over the past 3 years. Can you just maybe share with us what benefits will this actually yield to your approach The second question, you have been emphasizing a lot about this modernization program. You may not have the answer now, but what is the cost? And probably it might be important just to share with us the return on investment for this modernization program. For how long do you intend to actually run with this modernization program? At what point do you think we'll actually say we are done now? This is not the system. Of course, systems are always improved from time to time. I think those are the few questions that I thought I should just pose. In terms of compliance, because you see, you have said it is not easy to have a benchmark to say this is the actual or the target for every financial year. You have the target, but you can't say this is what we think we are comfortable with. From time to time, you improve. To achieve these targets that you set for yourself, to what extent does these compliance measures put in place assist you? Taking it from the deterrent element that I've just seen from honorable members, that once you speak about this particular matter of enforcement, they are reluctant even to engage with you. Yeah, thank you.
Small one, follow up just is with respect to priority number two, for instance, it speaks about turnaround time. I hope that it includes administration within SARS as well. But what I've picked up from small business, from a constituency work level, is that if people, for instance, now in the past, if people went there for tax clearance, they would easily get them. And now the more SARS is modernizing, the more difficult people get there, what they call a tax clearance. What could be the reason, for instance, has it got to do with modernizing? Why is it taking longer now for people to get the clearance certificate? Thanks.
Okay, let's let me cover some of the ground, then the Commissioner and his team can take over. On Mr. Swart's question about GDP, would the revenue come in higher? Well, if GDP is higher, it should come in higher, unless there's big games going on. And we'll link that to Mr. Sogoni's question around projections. Mr. Sogoni, as you know, you've been around a long time, Chair, with respect to the other Chair. You can never get them accurate. No way in the world has that happened. And a lot depends on where the growth picture takes you, but also depends on the question that the Chair asked about compliance. You can go in and you can think, I'll get R1 million out of a company, and you might come out with nothing. And you can go in and think you get R1 million, and you'll come out with 10. If you do your work effectively and find the right things. So there's a level of uncertainty that you've got to allow for. But generally speaking, higher growth does result in higher revenue. But remember that we're still talking about numbers that are well below our peak in 2008. So did the World Cup help? I'm sure there might be some indications that on the VAT side it did help. But they'll have the numbers. But generally, the World Cup also cost us a lot of money. not to SARS, but even in terms of managing borders and setting up some of the home affairs systems and so on, involved a fair amount.
in terms of modernization and the ROI, and when will it be done? Remember that we're fundamentally changing this institution. Firstly, in terms of its, let's call it overall design, but secondly, in terms of its products. So once you finish personal income tax, what's still left is corporate income tax. There's work that's starting on VAT. And what do we mean by that? We mean how do you make it more efficient internally, but how do you make it easier for the taxpayer as well? Similarly, on the customs side, a few years ago we would have told you how much of the custom submissions happen by paper and how much happen electronically. And there's a huge sea change now where virtually everything happens electronically. But there's still areas that one day the commissioner and his team can come and brief the committee. But what do we talk about when you say customs modernization, what do we mean? I think the point about ROI and cost is a fair one. They should prepare a document and submit it to you, Chair, which indicates the ROI from a service point of view is huge. If we can now remove tons of paper from the system, because very few income tax submissions happen through paper now. They happen either through electronic submissions or by assistance at our offices. So that makes a big difference in terms of management of paper. But Commissioner, the rest is yours.
Thanks, Minister. I'll also pass some of the stuff to people so that they can earn their lunch and salary. The question from Mr. Swart on corruption within SARS and regarding the whole VAT system. There are schemes and defrauding attempts that people cook together with people in SARS. We have arrested, and I think the Deputy Commissioner will be able to give you the numbers. I don't just have them, you know, ready on me, but we have arrested quite lately a lot of people even in SARS. And when I say a lot, I don't mean hundreds, maybe around 20 people that, you know, that have been collaborating with other vendors out there to defraud the VAT system. So there are those things. And part of the benefits of modernizing VAT and Barry would add a little bit in terms of how are we going to be able to verify using third-party information, you know, transactions that people claim. But remember how the VAT system works, you know. You exaggerate your VAT claims and you underestimate, yes. You underestimate, you know, your VAT sales in order to make sure that you can, you know, you pay far less VAT. And in that system, it all works out on invoices, and we, as part of the modernization of that, is really to try and verify that a transaction or a sale that you claim, the person that receives those goods or services has an equal and the same kind of invoice that they can produce for those services. So Barry would cover that, Honorable Mazlamini, the relationship between the four outcomes and the strategic priorities. As the chair mentioned, you know, we had 11 priorities, and the minister also added that, you know, we started our modernization. It was a priority then of modernizing, for example, PIT, which we have done to a certain extent. There are still things that are outstanding, like, you know, the finalization of the pay-as-you-earn modernization. There are third-party links that we still have to hook up, like, for example, you know, car kilometers of cars when they are serviced and so on, you know, automating that thing. We are working presently in linking up credit bureaus, for example, because they have a far better picture of, you know, the debt, the assets of individuals in our country. So linking up those information, you know, was a priority some few years back, so it has dropped, for example. You know? There was also issues of expansion of offices and so on, and the modernization of offices and, you know, the standardization of our services in most service areas.
which we have dropped also as one of the priorities that are there. So as we evolve and implement our modernization, we revisit, you know, our priorities and change them accordingly. You will see that next year one of the priorities would be the full modernization of the company income tax, which in this year, you know, is expressed as just an introduction of starting to put, you know, the first principles and defining the scope of the CIT modernization. So our priorities continue to change in that sense. But the core four outcomes of increasing customs compliance, tax compliance, improving efficiencies and turnarounds, those we see as enduring outcomes that would be with us for the future. But the underpinning objectives will continue to evolve with time. I hope that makes it clear. And we also have that slide that tries and explain how all those objectives fit under each of those outcomes. Over-collection of 2 billion rand was the projection. Realistically, I think the minister has dealt with you quite effectively, Honorable Sokhoni. Explain the reduction. Which one was that? No, that was the chair's question, yes. And anyway, so let me ask Barry and Tricks to deal then with the interest question, the question that Honorable Sibitla had on the, or was it you, on the 30 million interest, yes.
We receive an annual grant from National Treasury to defray the expenditure of SARS, and our expenditure patterns do not match that completely. So on average, we have about 600 million rand over the year, on which we generate 5% interest, and that will get you to the 30 million. So it's merely a mismatch between the amount of money that we receive from National Treasury and our expenditure patterns that's slightly back-ended, that leads to the interest income on own accounts.
Really?
Thank you. The first question, I think, from Honourable Member Swart was corruption within SARS. As the Commissioner, I think, has highlighted, we spend a lot of time looking at them systemically, because to eliminate corruption requires a look from the inside and the outside. But if I focus on the inside to start with, the modernization, and over the last 2 months we've already begun the first phases of the modernization of the VAT system. And basically what we do is there's a whole new, if you like, interface to the systems that our staff will use that has a much higher level of security. Simultaneously with that, it logs and tracks all cases in an electronic case management and workflow system. So those two together enhance significantly our ability to detect where people internally are working on things that they shouldn't be. In addition, it's a mechanism which we've used in personal income tax. It's called a get next work item. So you have an electronic queue, and you do not select the case you want to work on. And that blind case selection has now been rolled out to VAT as well, because obviously then the incentive to who to speak to in SARS to help your case is mitigated. Clearly, the further it goes up the chain till we have, if you like, the heavy enforcement audit cases, we are busy looking at other technologies, including recording the telephone conversations that people would have with our staff members. But we come all the way back to saying if we can fix up, and the first phases are more about modernizing what we have, about speeding up refunds that people think they are entitled to and they want them quicker. So to get that right, we have a new risk engine that we've been working on over the last 3 months, which has gone live this weekend, which tries to find out which are the, if you like, illegitimate transactions and separate them from the legitimate transactions, this balance between service and compliance. And the more accurately we can do that, the faster we can refund, if you like, people with legitimate claims. Going forward, as the Commissioner said, this is the starting point of this. We have a more ambitious plan to link up the invoice data and other third-party data from various other parties. But we can't wait for that, and so therefore we've begun from where we are. They're all steps in the journey that would hopefully get us to the right point in the next few years. Tax clearance certificates, it's an interesting one. There are situations where maybe we haven't done it right, and we never claim that we are flawless yet, and we won't be for some time. But the other problem is, for a number of people who've been in the past able to get around certain tax compliance matters, outstanding returns and other matters, as we digitize and link these up, we are more stringent on who's getting a tax clearance certificate. Now, we have been accused in the past of being too lenient with granting tax clearance certificates, so we obviously still have some work to do to find the right middle ground. But obviously, the more we link these up digitally, the more the taxpayers themselves manage their own accounts, that the financial affairs that they have are managed by themselves, the easier it will be to ensure that we get that accurate. And I still think we have some way to go. And speaking about modernization, tax clearance certificates are on our list for in the next 3 years as well, to make sure we do a better job of that.
Thank you, Barry. There was also a question on how much does compliance contribute from the chair towards revenue collection. Last year, Chair, just on debt recovery and mining our big debt book, we recovered around 13.8 billion, which, if no special effort was put in to recover this money, that money would have been left on the table. There's also, as I mentioned, money from administrative penalties. In its first year, which was not a full fiscal year, we collected around 761 million, just from around 86,000 people that paid administrative penalties. So there is a big contribution from a compliance point of view. Otherwise, if every cent was generated through economic growth alone, the need for an institution like ours that is supposed to collect all revenue that is due, mainly by closing the compliance gap would be redundant. So I think there's a huge contribution. How much of it is all because of compliance? We believe that, by knowing that there are consequences for non-compliance and being active in making sure that we put it in the front of mind of most taxpayers, would contribute. Most of the revenue going forward will be on compliance. My boss puts a lot of pressure to say, look, the deficit is high. So the only way that you can get extra revenue outside, the normal economic growth generated revenue, is really to go for those non-compliance pockets and mine them. And definitely, as the minister has committed, we would deliver a note on the return on investments of modernization. But as I think, as the minister has said, there's been huge benefits that really make the cost of modernization pale into insignificance almost. I'm not sure if I've missed anything, Chair, but if I have, the members will remind.
Thank you, Chair. One simple question, Commissioner. As a country, do we have a reliable database of taxpayers?
Maybe before you answer that, just on the slide number 4, I think one of the highlights is that through these additional measures, last year you were able to achieve a record number of over 4 million individual taxpayers submitting their returns on time. And you go further on to say, through employer assistance, you have now added over 4 million additional salary earners to the tax register. Were these people outside the tax bracket all this time, these 4 million people over?
Thanks, Chair. It is related to the Honourable Member's question. We have a tax register now, individual tax register, and Barry will give me the number. It's over 10 million now. Before we did an automatic and an obligatory registration of every person that is employed in our country through formal employment, those that are issued through IRP5s. That is the 4 million that the Chair is talking about. That automatically it was those people that were paying site and did not have the obligation to file. They still don't have the obligation to file. or, you know, fill in their returns and so on. So it's very simple, people who are below the tax-paying threshold. So those 4 million people, because they migrate over time, where they get into the threshold and they never register if you do not automatically register them. So one of the compliance things that the employers have to do when they do their returns, their pay-as-you-earn returns, is to register that every taxpayer that works for them, their address, their phone numbers, and all those biographical details, and do that twice a year so that we don't miss anybody during the year. So that's how we're trying to make sure that we will be able to improve the quality and the accuracy of our registration, of our register. But we also, as I mentioned, have other campaigns that we have planned this year. One of them is to go to all micro and small businesses in marginal areas to get on a drive, but we cannot do this alone. We have to have the collaboration of the whole of government, where Home Affairs, Health, and other interested state agencies, we go together to get on a march in the streets where we're going to register each and every person that we are able to do that thing. But we'll also leverage, you know, third-party information through how many people who has gone through our borders. And these things work hand-in-hand with the modernization program that we are working together with Home Affairs on, so that when you get through our borders, we have biometric of you. At the present moment, when you come through our borders, we don't take your fingerprints, we don't take your photo, for example. But once we have those things and we have manipulatable databases, we can be able to get now on a campaign and register those people and be able to check them against a certain database. So it is a journey. We're not there as yet, but we have started with the low-hanging fruits of making sure that at least if you are earning a salary and you have an IRP5, you know, you are on our register. The same will happen to VAT vendors. You know, if you are trading and you are claiming VAT, you should be able to be on our VAT register. And the same when we go and modernize CIT. Thank you.
I think we have come to the end of our deliberations, honorable members, Minister and your team, and thanks, Commissioner. As I did allude earlier on, that the issue of time is a problem, but it's something that we'll continue to look at so that we don't do injustice to this important preparations that you make in order to come and present to Parliament. I therefore just wish to thank you, Minister, and your team for making this presentation to be very, very, very informative on our part. Obviously, what we'll be more interested in is the implementation and the monitoring there from our side. And if there are areas where we can actually intervene and assist on time, let's not wait until the next presentation. Let's interact dynamically between ourselves and yourselves. I would therefore also indicate that there's one aspect in terms of a presentation of SMMEs. I think it's one important element because, as you know, almost 60% of real jobs are created in that sector, not on the other side. You need to pay specific attention in making sure that cordial relationship, and obviously there'll be others who do not even know what they're supposed to do or claim not to know what to do with their tax responsibilities. But there'll be those who don't know how to actually take advantage and use the space that we've created so that they can be able to use the measures that we've provided for job creation. Minister, thank you very much. As I said, honorable members, at the end of our deliberations, we'll also just try to look at the draft resolution that I spoke about. We've circulated something to your good selves. It's not the only matter that we've dealt with. so that the media mustn't think that the minister was here to talk about the IMF and the whole of National Treasury. We must not use this to divert the good inputs that we have had. But it's an important matter that we need to communicate on in terms of the presentation. I will just read for your own edification the draft and agree in principle that we can go and edit it so that we release it through the necessary channels of Parliament. Agreed? Should I do so?
Thank you, Chair. Is it proper to do it when the media is there?
Well, we don't think it don't cause much harm. They've been part of us from the beginning. Let me just take this opportunity to say, in terms of the Standing Committee on Finance met on the 31st May 2011 to receive a presentation on strategic plans, not plan, of the National Treasury and the South African Revenue Services. Among the issues raised by the National Treasury through the Minister of Finance, Mr. Pravin Gordhan, was the much publicized resignation of the IMF Managing Director, MD in brackets, and the pending appointment of the new MD. The committee, after robust engagement, decided to call on all relevant stakeholders to ensure the implementation of the G20 resolution regarding the transformation and modernization of the IMF and the World Bank, with specific reference to the appointment of the MD. We reaffirm the decision that the appointment be made through an open, transparent, and merit-based process. We therefore resolved that the South African government give this matter the serious attention it deserves. We believe that developing countries have the ability to put forward candidates who have the appropriate merit and experience. We therefore reaffirm that the appointment be made through an open, transparent, and merit-based process. We further resolve that government timely informs Parliament on progress regarding this matter. Full stop. I have completely changed some of what you have.
Yeah.
Yes. So it covers your concerns, what I have raised. Any other thing, Steve?
Okay, one doesn't want to enter too much debate on it. I'm in agreement with the broad ambit. Just the concern is that the wording that I've got here says the South African government give this matter the serious attention it deserves. I'm sure they are giving that. We should say maybe continue to give the matter. That's the first point. Can I may just ask, and then the last bullet, it says the government on behalf must pronounce its interest on the matter and start lobbying all relevant to support the candidate agreed to by South Africans. Maybe we should just say the candidate nominated by South Africa.
Good.
Because that will include whoever's nominated and excludes the possibility as to whether it's been agreed to by all South Africans. So that would be candidate nominated by South Africa, full stop.
Good. Agreed? It's for the committee members. Yeah. No. No. We thought you don't hear what you're saying now. Okay, you're released, Minister.
No, Chair, I was just saying, I got it from Paparazzi, maybe it might be important for us to note that the official opposition seems not to be comfortable with the fact of introducing a candidate or maybe candidates from developing countries. I so wish that Honorable George was here just to get it from the horse's mouth, you know, but obviously, we can allow you to hold our position at Ronsack, but I will just say let's not be surprised when we get it differently from other angles, because I got it and confirmed, of course, from Paparazzi that DA seems not to be comfortable with the developing countries forwarding a candidate.
Well, the committee, yeah,
the committee is resolving on this matter at the moment. If the opposition party has a different view, they'll raise it out there. But as a committee, we've taken a position on this matter. Thank you very much. So, Goni?
It's just a little bit of editing, Chairperson. That instead of among, I think it's among.
Yeah. Well, you see, we have a shorthand writers here. So we'll clean it. The principle is what we needed to agree on. All right. Do you hear this one? The resolution of, is that, is it 2008 or 2009? All right, good. 2008. All right. We need to check that. All right. Thank you. Thank you, honorable members. You are now released. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do that.